Hey guys, Brad Nickum, Tasting Tequila with Brad. I'm so excited about this episode. What do you get when you have somebody that is a successful winemaker? They're a successful brewer, and they've already dabbled a little bit in spirits. And you end up meeting a guy who's from Mexico, who's six generations of farming in the Jalisco region, and they farmed agave. And now you come together and you want to create your own tequila brand. That's what happened when Peter and Omar met each other and decided to blend their both knowledge bases of farming and agave, from distilling, creating amazing spirits and wine, to now making a fantastic tequila. This is going to be a great story. I think you'll all enjoy it. And I have to say, for a brand new brand that's an authentic, traditionally made tequila, this is fantastic. Pedro Fortivo, amazing. Hey guys, hey, this is Brad Nickum with Tasting Tequila with Brad, and I'm here with Omar and Peter, the owners and co-founders of Pedro Fortivo Tequila. I'm really excited about them telling their story and about this awesome brand. So guys, tell them a little bit about who you are and how you guys know each other.
You first, Omar.
Well, I am Omar Martinez. I am the agavero in this brand. I own and operate the family estate land where we have all our agave in Jalisco, Mexico. We're in the last little corner of the highlands. Everything on my end kind of started as a project to kind of revamp all the lands my dad had. Saw them, as we were younger, we had a lot of cattle, but having a business in the States and having land in Mexico was kind of hard for my dad to run both businesses. So the land started kind of got a little bit run down, wasn't being used. I could tell it was bumming out my dad, but he couldn't do both things at the same time. So as I started getting older, I started going to Mexico a lot more often and just really falling in love a lot more with Mexico, with my dad's land, kind of thinking of what it must have been like for him growing up, with next to nothing but just hopes and dreams, and then being able to acquire his farms and, take over more and more land that my grandpa had, and then adding more land to his farms. And it all kind of started for me as a project of love to kind of make my dad happy and see that his lands was prosperous again. So that's really when we started getting into agave a lot on a larger scale, and seeing that evolve into, let's figure out a brand. And who knew that at the same time, there's this guy named Peter doing the same thing I'm doing. And by just fate, we kind of end up meeting and a lot of our ideas align. And we end up kind of this is obviously a very fast forwarded version, but we end up falling together to make the same tequila with the same vision. And fast forward to now seeing our product in the stores in Georgia, Tennessee, seeing our friends and family drinking our brand. And for me, it feels really cool knowing that it really genuinely started in my heart with wanting to make the lands prosperous and make my dad proud to, see his lands functioning. That feels really cool seeing how far we've gone. And when me and Peter talk, I know through the stresses of the business, we'll get stressed out of the bottles are taking too long or, the labels are the wrong size. But then when we start talking about the future products we want to launch, we forget about all the stresses and get excited again, because it's been a really fun project doing this with Peter. When me and him hang out, we're like cheerleaders. We'll talk about what's next and we start getting excited, and we'll talk about our the way we want to do our commercials and whatnot. And we just go down a rabbit hole every time. So it's been a lot of fun working with Peter. I couldn't have asked for anybody else to be doing this with. Peter's a really great guy.
Man, that's awesome. I don't know if you could tell, but I'm actively blushing under my beard right now. Omar, you're the man. You know this. It's hard to follow that, but I'll try. My name is Peter Kiley, and I am, I guess what I would say in this operation, tequilero, but also I am a traditionally a chemist who has been in professional alcohol production for two decades now. Started more so in a winemaking family, ended up making wine in California, in Napa, Sonoma, Anderson Valley. Did that for quite some time. Made some wine, oddly enough, in my home state of Georgia over at Chateau Lawn, for anyone that knows that place. After that, trained to become a sommelier. Did that for a while. Didn't really like it as much. I found myself getting a little too pretentious. I didn't like, you know, being on the sidelines, you know, kind of critiquing other people's work. I really liked making. And then about 13 years ago, I helped to start a brewery over here in Atlanta, Georgia, called Monday Night Brewing. And I've been our brewmaster over here for quite some time. And from there, yeah, I'd say about 5 or 6 years ago, started distilling. And we have, you know, a whole liquor program over here and then a couple other businesses that we've launched. But tequila was always like the passion. But coming from wine, it's really important to me that if I was going to do this authentically, which people can always tell when you're fake, I'm usually a pretty hard critic on myself. I had to have connection with the land first and foremost. And so I always wanted to do tequila. I just never really knew how to. I didn't want to do some, you know, white label kind of just create a brand, but not have a soul. And then the universe is kind enough to give me Omar. And there's so many funny stories that we'll probably, maybe we'll get into today. Maybe we won't. But one of my favorite memories was the night that we decided to go into business together. There was a lot of tequila that was consumed. There is, if anyone knows Guadalajara well, I'll give you a hint. We were at a hotel where in the front, it's got these bronze statues of these little baby ducks. And we were really, really, I mean, in no shape to be creating a business. But we did it anyways. And you realize that people get put into your life for a reason. And I know that Omar is in my life so that we can both do something greater than, you know, just start a business. We really have a purpose that we need to live through. And luckily for us, Pedro Furtivo has become that conduit that we get to use to live our purpose. And it's been such a fun ride. Stressful as shit. But, you know, like I do it with one of my best friends, Omar, and I do it with my wife, Rachel, who is our CEO. And it's just amazing getting to create this new family, bring families together, bring people from different parts of the world together over this singular vision that we have. So, yeah, that's who we are. This is Pedro Furtivo.
That's awesome. I say all the time, tequila is, it brings people together. It's like so amazing. It's, I really don't feel that there's any other spirit out there that does that, where you have fun, so many hands that go into making tequila, so much time with the plant, so much tradition in the way that it's made. And then there's always so much to talk about, and it just brings so many people together. So I think that's pretty awesome.
I feel like it's probably broken up a few relationships, but you know.
Probably created some families too.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, I think it balances itself out.
Yeah, it does every time. So tell me about the name. How did you guys come up with the name? And I learned just a little bit ago, there's a meaning behind the name too. So tell everybody what that's about.
So the name actually started in many ways before the tequila did. And this is one of those rare instances where, I would create a brand before a product. I'm usually very product centric. So I usually will create a product and then obviously create a name, right? I'll design a beer and then give it a name. You know, you build your house first, then you paint it. But this one was a funny one. So we were starting a bourbon company over here that we're about to really do a big launch on in 2025. But it's been going for a few years privately just through our 6 locations at Monday Night Brewing. And I just called it Sneaky Pete because, you know, with our brewery license for a while here in Georgia, which if anyone knows Georgia, it's got some really aggressive laws just due to it being in the quote unquote Bible Belt. So it's very neo-prohibitionist kind of still. And so we had this license that allowed us to manufacture beer. And I think the statute of limitations puts me in the clear. But for a while there, I was just illegally distilling on our property. And so whenever people would refer to what I was doing, they'd be like, oh, he's being sneaky, a Sneaky Pete. He's over here just making some hooch in the corner, which honestly feels very Georgia, you know, like, I mean, it's kind of like, kind of our roots. I was doing what, my forefathers would have done, but,
a lot of yeehaws and some mason jars.
Yeah. You know, some good hooch. But so it was always Sneaky Pete. And I remember, asking my wife one day when we were trying to separate this from Monday Night Brewing and turn it into its own business and raise money and do all that stuff. I asked her, I was like, this feels like much more narcissistic than I felt comfortable with. And she was like, Peter, she's like, I love you. But she was like, one thing I know about you to be true. And she goes, if you put your name on it, I doubt you'll let it fail. And I was like, So one day we were talking about the tequila. We're trying to figure out, you know, what we were going to call it. And Rachel was like, why don't you just call it Pedro Fertitta? And I was like, well, what is that? And she's like, that's just Sneaky Pete. And then fast forward, you know, I meet Omar. And Omar and I, during one of our first meetings, which hopefully we get into the story later, but actually during our first meeting, sitting down, and I kind of like, you know, we're feeling each other out. We're trying kind of each other's vision for tequila. We're not completely getting along during this first meeting, which I always love about our start.
You know, that's what I was about to say.
We're both kind of like, who the fuck's this guy? I remember sharing with him kind of just this vision. I'd already had this brand put together. I just didn't have the right liquid. I didn't have anything except for the brand itself. And I showed it to him and he was like, dude, he was like, I love that label. He was like, it reminds me of something that I would have read like in a children's book in a weird way. He's like, it feels so much like something I would have seen my grandfather drink. And I was like, yes, that's really where I wanted this to come from. When I designed the label, I was like, I really wanted it to feel like a time that used to be. You know, you really see this winification of spirits right now where it's very modern. It kind of is, it's ushering it into a period of time, which I think is appropriate. But we always wanted to step back and go back in time. You know, I feel like so much of tequila is historic preservation. So we want to start with the label. But when I showed him the label, Omar's like, the fox. He's like, what's the deal with the fox? And I was like, you know, like, he's got a little crown on his head. I've always felt like this real tiny, you know, ruler of an even smaller kingdom. And Omar's like, the fox is my spirit animal. And I was like, the fox is my spirit animal too. And he was like, all right. He was like, I was like, this is all I got so far. And he was like, all right, we'll figure out the rest together. And, you know, I think it was about 2 weeks after that first meeting, we find ourselves in Mexico together, starting our journey together. And since then, it's just been like one of the coolest experiences I can imagine. This has been years now of this, but still feels short. Still feels like, you know, just because we're brand new now, we feel so young, but this road's been long for us. So
when I got the bottles, you know, I didn't know what they were going to look like, right? I hadn't seen the brand before, and I'm unwrapping the bottle, and I was just like, wow, what a cool, authentic looking tequila label. Like, to me, it has an old school kind of look to it. Like, it looks like an older traditional tequila. Like, it's been around forever, and it has this label that's, to me, is very classic. And so many people are hung up on how big can we make that fancy bottle. Or then you go back to some of the great older tequilas that have a screw top and a very plain label, but it's great juice inside. So this is like an awesome, authentic. It's very cool. I love it.
I'm glad you like it.
Going history-wise, so Omar, your family's owned land and grown agaves, like, is it multiple generations, right?
So I'm technically the sixth generation working this land. And we've always done a little bit of agave, a little bit of corn, you know, parts of cattle. It was always kind of touch and go throughout my family on who, you know, if there was more or less agave. Now that I'm kind of running the properties, it's all agave and a few horses. But yeah, it's all agave right now. What I realized with agave is that it's a very needy plant. But if you do things on time and you do things right, you can kind of break up your year and tackle it in sections. So, you know, you show up when it's time to remove the hijuelos, which were the baby saplings, when it's time to prep them, when it's time to prep the land to plant. You have a really good window time frame to do your work on agave. So you're not really like having to be there all year. And then one of my good cousins in Mexico, he kind of, at first, it was like part-time helping me, but now there's so much agave, he's there every day. And one of my uncles, they kind of run the farm while we're gone. So he's been awesome from the start. And he's a part with me in the agave. I've given him a part of it so that, you know, he feels vested in it as well. And it's cool, you know, to see when you... I remember this last time I was there on Thanksgiving, I was walking the land with my dad and walking through our biggest piñas and seeing how big our agave has gotten. And as like thought back to whenever that plot was barely planted, they look like little onions, just tiny, you know, like they're about a foot tall, a foot and a half. And now they're like, I could walk through there and you can't see that I'm in the field. So it feels really cool to see how like much they've grown, how much love all these plants have. Cause like they've been we've really, you know, not really skimped out on any of the process. We've really taken good care of them. And it's just exciting to see them grow. And you know, as they get older and mature, I always get excited knowing like it's going into our brand and people are going to be able to enjoy that process that we did on our land and be able to enjoy it in a tequila. And that one of the plots is really special to me. My dad was able to acquire that land, but before my dad's family didn't own it. It was a piece of land that one year my dad's dad would rent it and work it. And the next year my mom's dad would rent it and work it. So both of my wow. grandfathers and their, you know, their sons worked that land and now it's ours.
That's very awesome. That did you, so before you guys started the brand, were you selling agaves to other producers?
Yeah, that's what I was doing first. And it felt cool. You know, it felt really like special to be able to do that and know that like in, you know, X brand, there's some of our agave, but now that it's like our brand, it feels so much more special. It's just really unique. It makes doing what we're doing a lot more fun.
I can imagine knowing that that's yours. That to me is the coolest part. So many of the brands that are farmers that are making great tequila, it seems like their tequila is a little more outstanding than some of the ones that are just a brand sourcing or like you mentioned, a white label. Even some of the private label brands that are using just anybody's agaves. You don't get the quality that.
Yeah.
I mean, your guys is fantastic.
I mean, it's just to chime in here with how special this is. For people that have never tried Pedro Furtiva, which I'm sure are a lot of them, probably way more than the people that have tried it. It's just special that it's really such a closed process, right? You know, with it being, you know, coming straight from Omar's family's land in Isla Bacan del Rio to, you know, like to being in this bottle and then for the price that we offer it at, it's, and of course we're able to do all of that because of what Omar's, you know, six generations of family have provided. And it's such an honor for us to be able to carry on this tradition and maybe do something greater than they could have imagined with this land. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's part of the beauty of tradition that I love about tequila. So how did you pick the distillery? Did you already have a connection with the distillery that you guys chose, or did you kind of talk to other distilleries until you picked one?
So the owner of the distillery, he was good friends, which I didn't know right off the rip, good friends with my uncles, my oldest uncle on my mom's side. And, you know, we were looking at getting, when I was, before me and Peter were on the same ship and I was kind of doing my thing, I was already in the process of wanting to start my own tequila. And, once me and Peter met, just so happened, like the way me and him met and everything aligned, I had known about 1360, and then through a conversation with my mom, she's like, you know, your oldest uncle has a friend that's owns a distillery, right? And I went out and met him, super awesome guy, like just genuine person, and him and his sons run the distillery. So then I met Peter and we went down there and met them on 1360. Everything just seemed to be kind of in line with what we wanted, and we started going from there.
Yeah. Just to add on to that, 1360 was, it's been a really good partnership. Like all things, maybe it's a me thing. I don't know. I have a nickname back home in the brewery of Particular Pete. And I remember in the beginning, you know, my Spanish is not great. I know you and I were talking earlier, right? As a dyslexic, new languages are tough. But I remember, you know,
language is tough.
Yeah, right. Yeah, English. What a nightmare. But I remember I had a lot of opinions going in because obviously, you know, you can research a gnome. And 1360 had a speckled past of products that I was never really like kind of in line with. But once you get to sit down and really like kind of look at what we had to offer, you know, we it would do things with wild yeast and whatnot. But outside of that, once you know, we get to spend time with the family over there. Both Omar and I are so deeply relationship people. Like it really, like you know, when I think about the brewery, right? You know, we've got hundreds of employees over here, and I always tell them, I'm like, you know, I can train anything really into most people. but I can't chain, you know, integrity or work ethic or a nimble brain, right? Like, you know, I am not your parents. I'm not the military, right? Like, I don't have the time for this, but I just remember really kind of breaking through some barriers really quickly with the team at 1360. And once they were really aware of what our vision was and how certain things might need to change, just the willingness to go take that path, which has resulted in a tequila that I know if they were present, this tequila really is something that is really special. It's without a doubt, I think, some of the best work that the team over at 1360 has been a part of. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but
sure.
I mean, just you can even, you know, do some research. People can on Tequila Matchmaker and read about them. But it's cool to have a brand and a team right now that really kind of is taking this approach to create a new product in a way that 1360 hasn't done, and really doing it in such a singular way with a single estate kind of approach. And yeah, making it all about Pedro.
And it 1360s, it's a valley, right?
Correct.
In the lowlands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to call the valley lowlands when it's
I was like, we're in Hollywood.
4,000 elevation. But so you're using mostly highland agaves, which you're growing, and then distilling in the
lowlands,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get on the nose, I kind of got that malolactic, that little bit of a funk, earthy, herbal that I love so much in so many tequilas. And it's great. The nose on it's amazing. It has a great earthy agave forward flavor, and that those are the things that I gravitate towards. So I knew when I pulled it out this morning, I was like, oh, I'm gonna like this, you know. So it's fantastic.
Awesome.
So Juan Pablo Gonzalez is your master distiller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you guys really work with him to develop the palette that you were looking for? Or did you just kind of tell him, hey, go for it?
There is a lot of working with.
Yeah, this is where I learned a lot of from Peter about distillation and stuff, which is awesome. Like a lot of things I didn't know, I was able to watch through Peter and learn a lot. So yeah, we did a lot of work.
I would say more so than just the distillation aspect of it, as I think a lot of producers can attest to. Like, first, it starts with water quality. Water is so important when it comes to the production of any alcohol. You think it's, you know, predominantly what makes up, you know, most. I mean, come a certain point, once you distill, a lot of that water is, you know, obviously separated. But before then, the fermentation is so important. So it's good that you picked up that kind of, I wouldn't call it more malolactic, but there definitely is, when we think about our fermentation, we have a very wild fermentation in the sense that we have standard Saccharomyces yeast, and we have an immense amount of Brettanomyces. And you can tell when there's Brettanomyces, obviously, right? Because at the end of fermentation, there's a very well-developed pellicle over the surface of the liquid in our tanks. And, you know, it looks like a lunar landscape. It's a fascinating thing to photograph. But it's really important to us that we have, in as many ways that we can with our product, there needs to be a sense of place. And I think that, you know, with the property 1360, as well as, you know, Omar's family property, like collecting our yeast there, doing a lot of plating and bringing that in to our fermentation profile, using, you know, deep well water off of Omar's property, as well as rainwater that we collect to help put together the base of this, doing a lot of water chemistry, which I could probably do hours of just talking about the science of water. I know how to make water so many different ways. But yeah, from there, it's kind of like all of this comes together. And, I, you know, our fermentations, also just to add to this, like we really have avoided thus far doing any fermentation in the summertime. I like to have a more of a cold fermentation, just because Brettanomyces, you know, out of the world of yeast, I refer to them as the American yeast. You know, they just don't stop eating. They consume so fast. So we like to have colder fermentations, which, you know, we just had one recently, weather's lower, but all of this plays into this flavor that it comes across as, it almost feels full bodied when it's not. Mm. It has this almost oiliness, which a lot of that carries over from, you know, using Omar's agave, but as well as avoiding a lot of, you know, like the tails aspects. You know, obviously you want some aspects of your heads with your methanol and whatnot, but avoiding the bitterness that comes in the back end. I have probably one of the more inefficient ways of making tequila, but it results in just, once again, a beautiful product. So we choose our battles. I'm just great at not making money.
Great tequila is not made efficiently.
No, but it's indeed not.
So for cooking, are you using a stone or brick oven?
When we can, but we also try to really focus on less about how we're cooking it. And then really it's about like how long we're doing rest for and whatnot. So we've done both. Right. Autoclave right now, I know there's some idea of like a stigma around it. I personally don't see one as long as the rest times are proper. But we're trying to experiment as much as we can responsibly so that we have consistency within our brand, but we really like to explore. So right now we're just trying to figure out what fits best for a brand. And then, you know, it's always like this idea of historic preservation, but also innovation. So we're trying to do both, trying to figure out what works. But right now there's a lot of fun inside of rest times and just making sure that we're patient about our process.
Yeah. Some people are, you can't use an autoclave, but I have a lot of tequilas that I like are low pressure autoclaves. And I have several that I like that are high pressure autoclaves as well.
Yeah. There's a piece of me that always had this vision for what I wanted. You know, I kind of went into it in many ways in a box. And then you start figuring out what actually has an impact and you can measure that impact, right? Especially to approaching tequila production from a very quantitative point of view. So you start figuring out what becomes essential, what becomes a trademark of your brand, and then what has room for interpretation. And right now, like, I think low and slow is always the way to go and a good rest time before you start, you know, breaking up your cooked piñas. But beyond that, like, I have a lot to learn. You know, both Omar and I, sure, if he was here, he'd be agreeing with me. But we are already in our personal lives just, you know, commensurate students. But it's amazing being a student in an industry right now where there's actually surprisingly more than I expected of a group of masters that are willing to educate the next generation. You know, coming from wine, everything was so secretive in Napa. Only thing you knew is where the grapes were grown, you know, and what varietal they were. No one talked about yeast profiles. No one talked about, you know, there was no sharing of ideas because it was very dog eat dog. And then you go into craft beer. Craft beer is probably the most collaborative professional environment I've been in. Everyone sharing ideas. And that's why I think craft beer grew so rapidly outside of other economic factors was that it was so stimulating. It was this open source project where everyone shared data. And then, you know, coming into tequila, I expected to be maybe a little bit more of an embargo on information. But surprisingly, we've gotten to be around some of some of the fucking greats. Just because of Omar's connections and the people that he's become friends with over the years, but really getting to sit down and like openly share ideas and talk about what's working has been a huge advantage for us. And as long as we stay that, you know, that mentality of a student, I think that we'll continue to evolve our brands and just try to strive for making a better tequila.
Sure. So extraction using a roller mill, right?
Yeah.
And then in the fermentation, are you using stainless steel tanks?
When we can, it's nice, but we also like to have a diversification. So we can do both. We have a big old cooler that we can use as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So fermenting in the winter, doesn't that extend your fermentation time a little bit because it is colder?
Absolutely. And that's the goal, right? I think when it comes down to like the biomechanics and, you know, the aspect of what's happening, which is really more so biotransformation, right? And as you think about fermentation, there's a lot of beautiful compounds that will get cleaved or stripped or just volatilized inherently with a faster fermentation. So we've gone back and forth. I remember some of our first turns, we just were like, this isn't right. We go through distillation, we dump it. So a more of a struggle fermentation has proven to be something that we like more. In our flavor profiles, we're able to capture more of like the more necessary compounds than we do when we just have a really fast fermentation, which I know some people swear by, you know, champagne yeast of the world, you know, these really like, they call them, you know, diastatic. So these STA1 positive genes that result in just a very vigorous and fast fermentation. And that works for a lot of brands. It's just something that we personally don't really like as much.
Sure. Now, and from what I understand, you tell me, because I'm always learning new things at this. So a lot of the finish and the flavors that carry through the finish and maybe the peppery or the, I don't know, I don't want to call it a burn because it's not a burn. It's, to me, it's a spice. It's a, and the flavor changes through. Like I just got some cinnamon flavor in that, you know, spice in the end primarily comes from fermentation. Is that correct?
I mean, once again, I'm also by no means an expert, but I do believe that a lot of your building blocks, you know, from your water to your yeast to your, you know, your agave, you know, your mosto, like fermentation is outside of the act of distillation. It's the most important thing, right? So I do believe that we gain a lot. Obviously, to map it all out, which a lot of really fun, smart, nerdy people are doing. But I don't know for a fact where a lot of things come from. I just do know the more that we map our process, we start figuring out when we make a change somewhere, you know, taking the classic, you know, scientific approach of like one variable, you know, you don't want more than one variable at a time because you can't really tell what has changed and why. But as we just kind of tinker with our product, that's one of those places where it's fun to see, like, you know, you flip, you know, just turn one knob a little bit and, you know, things change. But yeah, there is so much to learn for us. Omar, I was talking about how we're just like constant students and just the great minds that we've gotten to be around just because of your connections in the industry. But just that we love learning and making the perfect tequila is impossible, but we really want to get close to it.
Yeah, I was saying about Peter, like I learned so much from him. I'm always asking him questions about distillations and stuff. And it's actually made me want to like go back to school and, you know, maybe get a chemistry degree because it's really like, I'm a very hands-on guy. I graduated with a computer science degree, concentration in cybersecurity. And, you know, when I got my degree, I was like, I just can't sit in an office all day though. Like I got to be talking to people. I got to be doing stuff, you know? So I followed on with my entrepreneurial spirit, but getting into this with Peter and seeing how much there is behind like with the chemistry and the distillation, it's really fascinating to me. And, I've learned so much from Peter and I'm sure he says the same, like learned a lot from me as far as like, you give me the field and I'll grow anything you want. But, you know, I think we make a really good team. Yeah.
So one of the things Peter told me yesterday, so your primary business is in the masonry and the construction industry. Is that right?
Yep. We do commercial and residential masonry. That's what we started in. We've really expanded that. We started building a lot of custom and commercial pools. We build all over the Southeast. We got into a lot of land management, like grading and stuff. So we've kind of just expanded the business quite a bit, me and my brother. And I really enjoy what we do. And now with this tequila, you know, like I said, me and Peter said earlier, it's a ton of stress. But when you see somebody post you up on social media, like, oh, trying Pedro Furtivo for the first time, like those little bits of that glory is like worth all the stress we're doing.
Well, yes.
So my background is a union bricklayer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I started laying brick when I was real young. I think it's a dying art. You know, people don't know how to do masonry anymore. I've enjoyed that. I can't relate with a lot of masons, you know, it's like you meet masons all the time now. It's like I said, it's kind of a dying art. So yeah, you definitely know the hard work behind it.
Yeah. It's definitely tough work.
But you guys have no idea how hard it's been to have to drink alcohol professionally for the last 20 years. All right. So
yeah, I do. I've always drank alcohol professionally.
So in Mexico, there's a joke that like masons in Mexico that they say, man, you were drinking harder than a mason. That's a lot of like the running joke in Mexico. Masons in Mexico, they know how to put it down for sure.
That's funny.
Oh, that's awesome. I have one more question on the Blanco. So when you guys are all done distillation, are you resting it before you're bottling it or are you going straight to bottle?
We are resting it. Absolutely. I think it's important. You know, there's always like this little bit of shock, especially in a lot of products. You know, with beer, you know, there's always this fear of oxidation, right? You know, oxidation in a beer is not a good thing. We try to keep it as anaerobic as humanly possible. But, you know, with tequila or with any spirits, you have a lot more of that wiggle room. But we do believe that just as you go through change, you have to create time for assimilation, reconstitution in a way. You know, so we do believe that there's a little restlessness area. We try to keep it short, but yeah, you know, it's one of those things that we found that we liked. And, you know, luckily with the tequila or any spirits, unlike beer, you know, beer, it's so important to keep things fresh. and that's paramount, right? But, and even with wine, oxidation is not always your friend, but with spirits, it's great. So we take our time. Everything really is built with this foundation of patience. So yeah.
Awesome. So now the repo, same exact tequila. You're putting your Blanco right into some barrels.
Absolutely. As I've talked about, barrels are my favorite thing. Like everything that I've done, right, with wine to beer to now spirits, like barrels are the through line, you know, outside of fermentation and yeast management. But, you know, for our repo, it's really important to us. You know, Omar and I, when we put this together, I kind of wanted to marry, just like we've done with a lot of things with Pedro, I wanted to marry our past and a present to create a future, right? So one way that I found to personally do this, to connect myself more with this brand, was to kind of create with our repo, it's always going to be with everything that we barrel age, there will always be an aspect of wine barrels as well as spirit barrels. So with our repo, it's a 60-40 blend. 60% of it is usually Heaven Hill 8-year barrels. Luckily, you know, with our beer business, we have a lot of different connections in the barrel world from Kentucky. So we have a lot of good things to choose from. But then from there, we use New World, Bordeaux, red wine barrels, French oak, obviously. And so it's a 60-40 blend, you know, spirit predominantly. And we do 6 months. I think that Reposado is right. It's very easy to monetize them, you know, get them out as quickly as possible, kind of hit those minimum requirements. But maturation really does have a flavor. The flavor of time is something that we don't have any curiosity to fake. And when you get it to 6 months, there's something really just magical about, you know, the harmonization of the wine barrel as well as spirit barrel. And we don't just take everything that we produce. We're still are very much selective as we think about our blends, to the dismay of our P&L. You know, if we are like, okay, that barrel doesn't work, doesn't really fit. And I think for us, you know, just with a lot of other producers, we're not unique in this way, but we really take a vintage approach to anything barrel age, regardless of time. So we really just want to make sure it's just as good, if not better, than the last time that we produced it. So for that one, you know, 60-40 blend, 6 months, and it really has this great flavor, you know, second, third use barrels. We don't want too much color. I want a little bit of influence, but also I think that Reposado, and I think Omar and I are definitely in agreement on this, and that is that our perception of Reposado is that it still needs some aspect of rusticity, right? It still needs to be a little bit rough, but it needs to be greater than an experience of just a traditional Blanco. You know, you need to be able to have the value associated with why it costs more, and that is, you know, the flavor of oak and thyme. And so it's great to be able to taste it because you can really taste, you know, the substrate, right? You know, the standard Pedro, you know, it's there. And then you get this great influence of thyme and diversified barrel sources, and just creates a really cool experience.
It actually has a really neat dry finish.
Yeah.
That is, you know, you don't get that in a lot of repos. I don't know if that's the wine influence or.
You can argue that maybe there's some influence of a tannic nature. You know, in wine production, so often in a red wine barrel, you'll have precipitates form, you know, potassium bitartrate, cream of tartar, right? That is a crystalline structure that will grow in the maturation of red wine. You'll see it inside of the stainless tanks. You'll see it inside of the barrels. So when we receive our barrels, we really like to etch them. You can go through with, you know, high pressure spray ball, which we use in the wine industry and the beer industry, and we can kind of strip away a lot of those tartrates, but also reinvigorate the oak to where it's reopened. You get kind of a little bit deeper into there, so you get unique flavors, but we try to avoid, you know, outside yeast, tartrates, anything like that. Even with our spirits barrels, we don't want to have any. Our barrels are great when they show up wet, right? You know, but we pour that out into some cups, strain it with some coffee filters, let the team try. But outside of that, we want our barrels just to be that. We want them to be wet and fresh, but not too much of an influence on our tequila, right? Our tequila is supposed to be tequila with a little bit of a guiding source of flavor.
I mean, you nailed it on the repo because you get the agave is the star of the show. You get that sweet cooked agave. It almost sweetens up a little more. You have a great sweet agave flavor in the Blanco, but it's I don't know. It's like almost a little more intense of sweetness in there.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's real authentic sweetness. There's nothing fake about it. It's so good. And then you get that earthiness. But then, like I said, in the finish, it's a little more subdued, but it has like a little bit of a dryness. And then I pick up that hint of cinnamon at the end, which I love. I love cinnamon in a tequila. It's one of those ones I kind of look for. Oh, am I going to get that spice? It's a spice that's so good.
We never got that flavor at 3, 4 months, even 5 months. And it's cool you say that sweetness, right? You know, within oak itself, especially with American oak, you know, Quercus alba and then Quercus petraeus, right? The two, you know, groups of oak. French oak is great, right? You know, there's an oxygen ingress that's a little bit different, obviously. But really within American oak, something that's so strong is the amount of hemicellulones and vanillin compounds, right? That are a part of this wood that leach into it just because of the solvent nature of spirits. And it's great that you get this authentic influence, right? As we know with tequila, there's this not invisible battle, luckily anymore, thanks to some leaders in our industry, but we are a certified, we're not certified, right? We just believe in an approach of additive free for anyone in the Mexican government that's listening. And we really like to make sure that we respect the heritage of tequila by guaranteeing in our process and our product that there is nothing other than water, yeast, agave, and occasionally thyme and oak, right? We don't really like to play with anything else. So it's really amazing that when you take this holistic, natural approach to tequila production, what you achieve, you know, just depending on the environment that you place it in for how long you do it.
I say additive free a lot. That's been a term that's been around for so long. But really, to me, it's more of is it a commercial product or is it an authentic product?
Yeah.
Is it an industrial product or is it a traditional product? And I think those really... That's a great way to define it. You know, that tequila over there is a very commercialized product. This tequila here is an extremely authentic tequila. And the flavors that you're getting are coming from an authentic method, real method.
We Omar and I talk about this often, and we like to use science to create our art. You know, I would not view ourselves as artists. We are very much so students of our individual disciplines. And we take this consistent, you know, quality improvement approach, and it results in both us being stimulated and fulfilled, but also hopefully it creates a great experience for people that consume our products.
Yeah, I've heard that theory with some other people that I know that they're that same thought process. And there's a great brand out there and a guy who's done a lot for tequila that in his motto, it's the future of tradition.
I like that.
I like that because it's taking this family heritage. You know, Omar talked about how your land was falling in disrepair because you didn't have something to do with that land that would create keeping the tradition of your family going. So it's all that the future of tradition, I think, is such a cool way to say it because it's going to take something that's so old and so amazing and not necessarily change the way it's done and continue to create it for people in the future. It's awesome. So Blanco, Repo, anything else coming?
Omar, you want to share the news?
I see you got something hiding back there, Peter, on your little table.
Oh, you see this?
Oh, there's some hiding back there.
See this beautiful little label? I guess it's okay to talk about it. You know, things in the industry are tricky right now, you know, with administration changes and, you know, the fear of tariffs and whatnot. So Omar, Rachel, and I have been busy behind the scenes trying to get our ducks in a row for the future of our brand. One thing that you'll hear us consistently talk about is that, you know, we believe that people deserve nice things. And we say this in our meetings. We say this is how we conduct ourselves in a very authentic way. Things are hard, right? Money is not easy to come by always. And I feel like quality experiences are priced away from people so frequently. So as we build our brands, we always want to keep this balance, right? This struggle, a healthy struggle of how can we create the best experience at a fair price? And really guarantee that we're not just going to be a brand that's around for a few years, or, you know, as tequila just grows so rapidly, we don't want to be just another one that goes away in a short amount of time. You know, ideally, this is something that, you know, my kids are a part of, and that I get to bring a generational gift the way that, you know, Omar's parents and their parents before them, you know, six generations have done that. So from there, as we go about this struggle, right, we have a new product that we'll be launching. And just to put this out there, you know, Pedro Frativo will always, you know, have its Blanco and its Repo. In the future, we do see ourselves very much so having still strength. And we plan on having a lot of fun inside of Reposado. I think Reposado is an amazing place to explore specialty barrels, kind of taking the approach of some of the things I've done in craft beer over, you know, the past decade or so, and do it respectfully, but also create a gentle realm of innovation to see where we can responsibly take tequila. So for our next commercial product that will be coming out, hopefully it'll be in the States before the 20th of January, will be our first step into a vintage añejo. And this is a brand that we're calling 1331. And I say it's a brand, but really it's not. This will be, as a, for example, think of like Fortaleza, right, with their winter blend. We plan on putting together a yearly, almost celebration bottle for our celebration of oak and thyme. So we'll put together just kind of almost like a proprietor's blend every year. So this year, we're doing what we call 1331. So 10% of our blend is 13-month-old Pedro from a source of different red wine barrels, actually from a winery I used to work at in California. And then the remaining 90% of the blend is 31-month-old Pedro that has been aging in our standard Heaven Hill barrels. We have different uses on some of the blend aspects to give it a lot of range and variance. But so, yeah, we, you know, as we're doing this with our friends over in Mexico, they're like, you know, you can just wait like a few more months and you could charge a lot more. This could be like extra añejo. And I remember telling Omar in our other I would say almost in a way partner in our business, our man in Mexico, Noe, who is Omar's cousin, and he's so deeply a part of our brand and so much a part of our success. But I remember telling them, I was like, kind of had this vision of, you know, this like 90-10 kind of thing. And we're talking about this in our 2-hour car ride through one of the valleys to get to our distillery. And they're like, all right, well, let's put together a couple of blends. And I was like, all right, so we go through this and the end of this 3-hour blending session, we're all just like 1331. And as we put the name together, Omar and I, you know, we're joking because in Mexico, numbers really have an immense significance, both spiritual. There's a lot of ways that numbers manifest themselves. And you see that so often in Mexican culture, as well as like even in tequila, right? But we found it to be fun, even though my wife's over there, she's kind of scratching her head. She's like, 1331, like, unless we do the same exact thing, which knowing you, Peter, you'll never do the same blend every year. She's like, this is going to be a one-time label. And I was like, yeah, I think it's just going to be a vintage. It's a celebration. So weirdly enough, we're not taking a very brand architectural specific approach. You know, we have our two core products, our Blanco and Repo. And Rachel's like, wait, our third product's going to be a specialty product? And I'm like, yeah, why not? Like, it's people deserve nice things, right? And then she looks at me and she's like, damn it. So 1331, our celebration in añejo, will be coming out and will be available for sale next year early. And I think it's probably like, think of being fair, I think it's at $63 a bottle for a 31-month aged tequila. So I think that's still pretty dang fair.
So why so cheap? That's one thing we talked about yesterday. You said the word cheap. I don't like the word cheap. I like the word inexpensive.
Yeah, that's probably
why. I mean, these are excellent. And I know your price points are really low for the product that you have here. And I think you said your goal was you wanted to bring not as much profit focus as you were on bringing great tastes to people in the world, right?
Yeah, you know, everyone always talks about ROI. ROI. I hear about ROI all the time. I got different CFOs and accountants in different businesses. No one ever talks about ROF, and that's return on flavor. And I'm sure they don't talk about it because no one knows about it. But I think ROS is important. But really, from there, one of our early nights of drinking too much, Omar and I, one of the first places, the first base that we landed on together that we stuck our flag in the ground, our first campsite, was that we wanted to operate within our currency. And our currency has always been trust and respect. That's how we treat each other. That's how we like to treat other people in our lives. That's how we were raised. And then as we think about creating a product for other people, both Omar and I are in our professional lives, we are people pleasers, right? We create things for people. You know, the things that Omar builds, which, by the way, he's being extremely humble. I mean, you can see this guy's work like on like Architectural Digest. Like the guy is, I mean, he's prolific right now. He's going to be one of like, he will be known as one of the greats, him and his brother Christian. But, you know, from there, like, trust and respect is really important. If you're going to really build something, especially when you're the new guy, it's so important just to operate in trust and respect. And if we do that well and we have a fair price, then at some point, I'm not an economics guy, but at some point, I think if you focus on quality and top line growth, you will encounter financial success. And unfortunately for my wife, Omar and I are less concerned with financial success right now. We're concerned with being a part of the conversation. We really want to earn the trust and respect of producers and consumers that when they see our brand, that they know that with their hard-earned money, that the experience they'll get when they support us will be greater than for your a greater value than for some other brands. And that's how we're going to ensure that we stay here for a while. And we need to rely on the fact that if we don't put our customers first, and really our product first in many ways, then we will come in last.
Well, and I can tell you that my wife appreciates that as a person who spends a lot of money on tequila and loves tequila, to find a brand that is in a price point that is easy to buy, that is so good, that's my wife sends her thank yous.
Tell her we are very welcome.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Omar?
That was one thing me and Peter talked about at the start, as far as like the trust and respect. I really liked when he brought that up, because, you know, I kind of learned that from him. You have one shot to earn their trust and respect. So every time somebody opens this bottle and tries it and they like it, you know, it's we kind of have every advantage to win, because it's a great product. It's very reasonably priced. And I think it's pretty cool because, like, you know, people like me growing up in construction, when you go to a family party or whatnot and you have a bottle for an occasion, like, this is very affordable, and we can kind of share that with everybody in the industry that, you know, Peter's in, I'm in. It's kind of like a for us, by us product, because, I mean, neither of us are celebrities. And the first one that becomes one has to leave the business, because we're a celebrity free business.
Yeah. Additive free, celebrity free. You'll see it in our marketing, but, you know,
you have a celebrity here. The celebrity is the juice that's in the bottle.
That's what we like.
That's what it's supposed to be.
The celebrity is the fox. Yes. It's I think there's a lot of hero brands out there. You know, think of like, you know, like Arizona iced tea, right? Or think of like the Costco hot dog, right? I think there's a lot of ways that it's important to protect the customer. You know, obviously capitalism is the thing that makes our world move around, but because of the gift that Omar's family has provided us and the torch that he's carrying, none of this, the product, the price, none of it would be possible if we had a more of a shared ecosystem with other partners and other, you know, suppliers. But because of the fact that it's so contained inside of our business, it allows us to do this. And that's been such an awesome gift that I know I don't want to squander. So it's been really a fair amount for us to continue down this path for as long as we can. And, you know, I know that in the new year, we're going to have a website available where people can purchase this in many different states. And unfortunately, on the website, they're going to see that it has to be priced higher just because of like shipping, and it's a loophole that you can like send things out of Washington, D.C., right? Because it's not a state. And so the prices there, like, I even struggled with my wife, and I'm like, what, these prices, they're not right. And she's like, Peter, they're like $4 more. And I'm like, well, that's like you know, for a $36 bottle of Blanco, right? That's more than 10%. And she's like, oh, right, you sweet boy. She's like, you suck at making money.
Are you guys in Florida yet?
No, we're not. We're focusing slow, growing deep, establishing roots. We're going to be sold in Mexico.
Tiptequila.com in Florida. That's a great way to take your product a lot of places. And I don't have any affiliation with them other than they probably know me by name by the amount of things that I order. Because we live in a tequila desert in Indiana. Like, there's not great distribution in Indiana. So most of the great tequilas that I'm looking for, I'm ordering them from somewhere and begging my, you know, liquor store owner to give him a hard time to the distributors, you know, to pick it up. But a Sip Tequila is a great way to get your product, you know, a lot of places with one, you know, one great company. So they love great, authentic, traditional tequila. So you should reach out to Sip Tequila.
Sip Tequila better not be surprised when they hear from Pedro Furtivo.
Yeah. And they specialize in great tequilas. It's one of the things you'll see on their website, and they're going to eat this up because this is a really great product. Like, I'm blown away. Honestly, it is really good.
Thank you. I mean, the world is truly.
Awesome, yeah.
We've had a lot of sleepless nights and hard days.
These aren't going to last long.
It's ready.
I'm going to have to send you my credit card and my address. So are you working on, I heard you mention it a little bit, you know, I think 2024 was the year of the high proof. Like, everybody rolled out a great high proof. And to me, because I am a Blanco drinker and a very agave forward flavored tequila person, the high proof seemed to bring the most agave flavor.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys rolling out a high proof?
Yes, we're actively working on one right now. And I think that we're really close in regards to our quality of our product. We already have, you know, like the brand itself figured out, the label, everything. So that's the easy part. We just really want to make sure that with our approach to tequila production right now, that we find an expression that will be consistent and that also is commensurate with the work that we've done so far. So I still have some figuring out what to do. We're kind of doing some water manipulation right now, trying to figure out what ways that we can accentuate a lot of these flavors. But, yeah, hopefully we're close. And I think that 2025 is going to be a really exciting year for our brand and for consumers that do support our brand.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned rainwater, and I think that is so cool. Like, I can think of another brand out there that's doing some things with rainwater, doing, you know, a deep well rain blend, or just a rainwater, or just a deep well, or just a spring. And I don't think a lot of people understand how much that can change the flavor of tequila. And a person that lives in a house with a well, you know, I can go to my mom's and the well water tastes different than the well water here. And then adding rainwater to that. Are you guys, like, one of the things I love when tequila brands put on their labels, hey, this, we're utilizing these processes and we're getting the agaves from these fields and really turning what I kind of picture as a vintage in wines into your tequila. Do you see that as something in the future where you're putting kind of, hey, this came from this field, planted on this day, harvested on this day, and explaining the differences in the waters and the processes?
Absolutely. I don't know. Maybe people out there are familiar with Dr. Bronner's soap. Obviously, it's got the craziest label. It's got all this information. There's some wild stuff on the label. But I've always loved the idea of transparency, right? And also, like, if you're proud of your process, you shouldn't want to talk about it. Right? You shouldn't want to hide, but sometimes, you know, like, as we think about growing our brand with being just so new, right? So new. I mean, no one knows about us. It's good to get the right information across. We're working on some marketing collateral to help better tell our story, both from our individual points of view, as well as just tell the story about our product itself. But, I want to be able to share, and luckily you're giving us this platform to, you know, help tell our story and to speak about our product. And I feel like there's so much dang information to share that people would, I would have to have like a pamphlet on the back, but it's cool to get to talk about it now. And we'll talk about it more on our websites. And as we grow, we'll help people to understand why the things that we do are important to us and how those important aspects translate into the flavor of the product they consume. And I think that's always a part that I love sharing. And I learned this as a psalm, is that like, you need to be able to tell a story with enough detail that in a way it not only elevates the product that you're consuming, but in many ways it becomes your own story that you're able to then go share with other people, and you get to pass on this gift of knowledge in a really tasty kind of engaging way, right? So information, when used properly, is really, it's definitely in many ways a great pairing for the product that we have. And we do want to plan on giving people more information about what we do and who we are.
I can't wait for the future of your brand, because this is awesome stuff. So tell me, let's wrap everything like up in a beautiful little package, and we'll leave people wanting more so we can do this again. Because when there's new products coming out, that's a great time to like talk about more. And I tell people that I get FOMO in this business. Like, there's a brand that launches something, and then I can't wait to get it. And then I get it and I drink it, and then I get FORO, the fear of running out, because you know, you're 1331, that's going to be this many bottles, and then there's that many bottles, and then now you have, you know, you buy a case of it because you like it, and then you're like down to that last bottle, and you're like, man, I can't ever have this again, so now I gotta wait, and then hopefully the next one's just as good. So I think you're gonna be on that path of creating some FOMO of the things that you put out there. And then us people who drink it are going to be like, dang it, I'm going to run out and I can't get another one. So I think you guys got a like great thing going on, and it's going to be really fun to watch you in the future.
Thanks.
Yeah, me and Peter talked about that a little bit, of making our specialty products and, you know, our vintage products, where it'll be a one-time run, and then the next one we'll have to put our heads together again and find it. So yeah, you know, and I didn't really realize that, you know, you as a consumer like felt that way, because us as the producer, we're seeing them sell, and we're like, we're almost out, like it's over. So it's cool, it's exciting, because it gives us more, a bigger push for the next thing we're gonna make. But it's been a really cool process, and we're super excited to launch this 1331 and see how the public reacts to it. So yeah, it's exciting.
And, you know, and just to add to that, one of the things I always really disliked about my time in Napa was that there's like, you know, it's the circus, right? You know, so often the quality of the wine is probably one of the last things that matters. You know, it's the facilities, it's everything else. And then there's this sales approach that I learned in wine that was, you know, called perceived scarcity, right? You know, where you'd have like a case out on the table, someone would come in, you do a tasting, and they'd be like, this is amazing. And you're like, yeah, this is actually the last case. I can only sell you one bottle though. And they'd be like, no, 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 come on. And they'll be like, I'll buy the whole case. I'm like, okay, fine, you can buy the whole case. They would leave. They'd walk out with it in their hands, feeling so exclusive and special. Second they leave, you put the next case back onto the table. And I've always disliked that. But something I've known that for myself and as well as Omar and Rachel, that in order to have this healthy appetite for innovation, you do have to have scarcity, right? And so now we might produce products that not everyone can get. And that's something that I don't believe is a nice thing. And we want people to have nice things. But at the same time, like, we're not going to intentionally do it or manufacture scarcity. But when we do it, it'll be because we had to create this. We had to, you know, scratch that itch. But now that it's gone, it's going to force us to go explore once again and create something that we would already want to be there. We're not trying to fill a void by any means, but it's fun just to have your own internal motivation to go explore, to really just to explore, and then allow people to taste your findings. And I think that's really cool. So.
And that creates the scarcity by creating a great product, right? You mentioned Winter Blend, which is a great product. And we get like this much left in the bottle. And then we seal it up, you know, we gotta save that because you can't get it again. And I see you guys down that same road with an amazing bottle. I mean, it's awesome. So
thank you.
Where can everybody find you social media wise? Where do we go to find you on all of the social media stuff?
At PedroFurtivoTequila.com. And then we're trying to make Omar famous first and exclusively, yeah. Omar, so that he has to give up his shares in the business. So Omar, why don't you tell them your Instagram handle?
At Pedro Vertivo Tequila.
I'll share it on the link, guys. Don't worry.
Okay. Perfect. But around here in Georgia, like what we're trying to educate everybody on is like, if you go to our website, you can do the Fertivo finder, put in your zip code, and that'll help find the nearest store local to you. And, you know, by going through all this perceived scarcity, like we actually sold out. So we were like, we're sorry, guys. Like, we don't have any Blanco at the moment. Luckily, we're all full in stock, ready to go. But it was really, it was kind of a bummer that we sold out, but it was really cool to see how many people were actually looking for us.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. You find the light in the darkness. A lot of people were like, where can I get it? Where can I get it? And we were just getting a flood of messages. So it was pretty cool to see that in just a little time we had grown that big of a fan base.
And I'll also say, just in the spirit of, if my wife was here, she'd be like, it's important. We are dramatically increasing distribution in 2025. I'm not going to state which states yet, but we're already in advanced talk with a lot of different markets. Obviously, we'll have our website up early in January for people, if you're in one of those states that complies, that you'll be able to acquire it there. And then just to plug one more product before we wrap up, you know, with this additive-free approach to tequila, which has really been important, as in beverage manufacturing, I see a lot of weird things that go into products. And there's a category of products called RTDs, you know, ready to drink. And I don't really like the idea of a canned cocktail because I love bartenders. And I think a bartender is one of the most important positions and professions in our culture. So I never wanted to put a product out that would interfere with the role of a bartender. But we did take this really fun approach where we created a product called Yacht Water. And you'll see it on the website when we're able to sell our tequila online. You'll see this Yacht Water on there where we actually use our same additive-free reposado, and then we put it into a canned drink with just like four or five ingredients. No preservatives, no additives, no nothing. So Pedro Fertivo Reposado Tequila, that same old 6 month that you got in the bottle right there, and then key lime juice, sea salt, and water. 0 grams of sugar, 0 grams of carbs. Really just, we wanted to like kind of do what's been so instrumental in tequila and try to bring that influence and that honesty into other realms of alcohol manufacturing. Because I can tell you, for someone that works in, that has worked in wine and in beer, and now in spirits, I haven't done cider, but there's a lot of artificial shit out there. And I think that it's amazing that you get to see tequila really, really making this push towards transparency. And so I want to help usher that into a different industry, which, if anyone knows about the world of RTDs, the White Claws and the High Noons of the world, there's so much artificial shit in there that, as someone that's a food scientist, it just makes you, just disgusted. So we want to create a new point of view, an alternative. And the more we do this, the more of Omar's land we get to advance, and we get to use Peñas, and we get to grow this idea of creating a larger brand of high quality products, because people deserve nice things. So, yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you guys taking your time today and doing this and having these bottles sent. I appreciate that very much. And I look forward to this coming out, because people are going to learn about a whole new brand that is going to be, I think, a great brand, because your product's great. Your philosophy is great. You and I have a similar philosophy in the way I say it, a little differently than what you've said it. But I've always believed that if you help other people get what they want, you inevitably get what you want. And, you know, coming out at a price point at such an amazing product with such a great story, it's, you're giving us tequila people what we want. And I think people are going to embrace that. And I think it's awesome. And having that website where people can find you is going to be so important. So when you have that ready, I want to know so we can do like a quick video and launch that out and tell everybody. And my door is always open to you. If you say, hey, you know, I got this going on, I want to put this out there, call me. We'll do another one of these videos. So awesome. I look forward to your guys' journey.
Thank you. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been really exciting to get to tell our story.
And when the añejo comes in, we've got one with your name on it for sure.
Yeah, I'll drive all the way to Georgia to get that.
Don't worry, it's Georgia. We'll drive it to you. You know.
You're going to be here in May. You told me you'd be here in May already. So in May, we're going to do a tasting tequila with Brad video when you get here.
I will be in your town for the Craft Brewers Conference 2025. So maybe when I'm in town, I'll let people know that we can do a little live, we can be drunk influencers. We can be under the influencers.
I am always an under the influencer. I will agree with that.
It sounds like I have to tag on to this conference with Peter.
You know, I'll see if we can set up maybe a tasting too, because you know, we do some tastings, and your product would be a phenomenal product to do a tasting with. So maybe we do that when you're in town as well.
That'd
so
be great.
Your stay probably just got longer.
I can tell you that as someone that's, you know, relatively new in the tequila industry, the amount of like, and this is for everyone out there, the amount of generous, nice, hospitable, kind and curious people that are attracted to the tequila game right now, it's amazing. So everyone out there, keep it up, because I think that we have a really special community that we're building. And Brad, I mean, thank you so much. Keith out there, if you get to watch this, I mean, there's so many people that have really taken a genuine interest in helping us. And if for all you normal people out there, that's very rare. So it's been so promising and stimulating to see that there's just this great group of people out there that genuinely care about each other and that we all love tequila. I think tequila is a conduit for good people. So far, I've been very, very relieved.
That's the same thing I've noticed. And me and Peter talked about this other day, like seeing our reviews and what people write about us on Tequila Matchmaker. And, you know, like Peter said, a shout out to Keith. We met at Arte Agave. He came, met me. Peter wasn't there on that show. It was me and my brother. And Keith came up to me, tried our product, and he was like, this is amazing. And I'm going to add you in my group of tequila guys. And then I started seeing Pedro pop up, and Keith was sending it out to everybody. And I was just blown away at how nice everybody is and how genuine everybody is to just try a nice product.
Yeah.
So it's been awesome.
When you bring a product like this to the market, that's what you get. And it's amazing. So it's a great product. So that's probably the best close I've had for a video. Like, can you guys be on all my videos?
Yes, we can. Currently, right now, we need to diversify our streams of revenue, because yeah, you know, we are all L and no P. But
there you go. Well, I think Rachel will get that straightened out at some point. I do believe
she's actively working on it more so than we are. But we all have our roles, you know. We all have our roles.
That's right. Well, I appreciate you guys very much. Thanks for your time today. And
thank you.
I think this will be a great video for everybody. So thanks for your product, your hard work, your friendship, your belief systems, and, you know, just the core of who you are. It's going to make you very successful. And I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you to everyone out there. Thanks for supporting us.
Thank you, guys. Have a happy new year.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. That was Omar and Peter from Pedro Fortiva. You heard that they have a website coming soon, and you can find them all over social media. I'll have the links in the summary and also in the comments. And this is one to definitely go seek out and find this brand. The tequila is absolutely amazing. It's authentically made. It has great flavors. The agave forwardness is amazing. So try it. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.